The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're off and running on another week of broadcasting here on KPCG and KPCG.fm. It's the Thanksgiving week in the United States, so I'm sure they're gearing up for a little bit of time away from school at the headquarters campus. And also here, we follow the same calendar events as they do at headquarters. And so we'll have, I believe, Thursday is Andrew Locher subbing in for me, or maybe Friday. And Brad McDonald's on the other day. So you've got some two power-packed subs lined up for the latter part of the week. And the first part here, we'll just try to put the finishing touches on some of the things that we were discussing last week, the end of last week, with Brexit in particular, the California fires, as I'll get into here in just a moment. And for the rest of the show, I'd really like to spend some time talking about, well, just a variety of things that hopefully we can tie together with one common theme. First, though, for Brexit, there's not a whole lot to add to what we discussed last week. We're still waiting to see if enough people are going to object to Theresa May's leadership and then trigger a conservative leadership vote. There have been a few days now for, I think that Brexit deal is something like 530 pages. So as more people have pored over the pages of that agreement, they're coming to see, just like Benjamin Netanyahu used to say about the Iran nuke deal, that this is a bad deal. Boris Johnson, he's in the running to replace Theresa May. He said in the Telegraph this morning, if MPs vote for this deal, we are bowing our neck to the yoke. We're preparing to take colonial rule by foreign powers and courts. We're handing over colossal sums of money for nothing, he says. We're giving up the hope of new free trade deals. It says we're giving up the right to our very laws. We're betraying leavers and remainers alike. We're poised to abandon any UK influence in Brussels. And yet we are signally failing to take back control. He says, in fact, we're surrendering control to the EU. That's what this agreement, this so-called agreement, does. And he's not the only one that's comparing it to colonial rule. There's another article in the Telegraph today as well. What is now being proposed by the government as the best deal available is, in historical terms, a monstrosity. It is practically unheard of in modern international relations for an independent state to place itself under foreign jurisdiction and foreign legislation. One would have to think of colonial status, for example, the American colonies before 1776, for an adequate analogy. It says, for a modern democratic state to deny its own citizens even an indirect voice in deciding the laws governing them for an indefinite period would previously have been unimaginable. Taxation without representation to the tune of $39 billion. We don't want to be ruled by an outside power. I mean, in some ways, as these people are now writing, it's worse than being a full-fledged member in the European Union. It betrays both the leavers and the remainers, as Boris Johnson said. The Spectator went through a lot of the details in the agreement and published the top 40 horrors lurking in the small print, and one by one, line by line, the horrific details, the way the Spectator sees it. Go back then and listen to that show we put together on Friday, commenting on some of the breaking news from the end of last week. The battle lines are being drawn, and they certainly are, between Europe and then Ephraim and Manasseh. Those lines are stark now. You're really beginning to see them show through. Well, President Trump visited the state of California on Saturday. This state that's just been scorched by these fires that they can't get control of. There's, I think, something like 1,200 people now missing, and they've discovered 76 bodies. 76 have been recovered. So there's no telling. This is, I think, one news item said that this was the most destructive, deadliest wildfire in California's history. And you think back on, I covered some of this last week too, so we don't need to reiterate, but you think of that prophecy in Amos 4, fires or drought in one region and then flooding in another. And then too, think about what my father has said over the years about the state of California and its attack on the Worldwide Church of God back in 1979. And now we just see that state. It used to be the Golden State. It used to be the state that drove the U.S. economy. And now all of these curses, the fires, the drought, the immigration, the out-of-control immigration, just one after another, the deadliest, most destructive wildfire in history, well, at least in California. I want to go later on this week, if not this week next, I keep telling the staff here, that I'll get to the material soon enough. We had the centenary last week, the armistice, 100 years on, and I've been wanting to just go through some of the changes morally, the immorality of the last century, or 100 years of the new morality, as Mr. Armstrong called it in The Missing Dimension and Sex. You compare our society today in 2018 with what it was coming out of World War I, 1918, 100 years ago. And Mr. Armstrong, as I'll cover with you later, he really pointed to that post-war period, both of them, the First World War and then the second one too. But he talked about great changes that came upon our society, our nations, following the end of that great struggle against fascism in the case of World War II, that great struggle against tyranny, and then coming out of that, looking at our nations and how our people just relaxed, morally speaking, and to the point where today it's anything goes, anything goes. There was a story in a Kansas City paper about this pastor, this theologian in Chicago, a black pastor who kicked a transgender out of his service. He told him to stand up. He took a look at his clothing, his attire. This was a man dressed as a woman. And he asked him to leave. Well, that exchange was filmed by one of the congregants and then posted on Facebook. And of course, you know what happens then after that. You get the fight on social media. All of these people outraged that he would kick that individual out, and then some that would come to the defense of the pastor. Listen to what this preacher had to say on his Facebook, or actually it was the Facebook posting of someone in the congregation that didn't agree with it. This is clip one.
Can you leave my church and go put on man clothes? And don't come here like that no more.
Thank you, Jesus.
I hold a standard in here. Mm-hmm. Whatever you do on the outside is your business. But I will not let drag queens come in here. And y'all gonna come in here, you're gonna dress like a man. Now, whatever you do on the outside, that's your business. But when you come in this house, if you a man, dress like a man. If you a woman, you dress like a woman. I'm not going to allow it.
Now, of course, that just a few years ago would have been seen as common sense. But today it's controversial. Today, if you ask a transgender to leave your congregation, this is controversial. The guy who posted the video on Facebook, it's been viewed, at least as of the time of the writing of this article, It's been viewed 420,000 times. 2,000 comments have been left under the video. And all of these critics, what happened to come as you are? I mean, you should be able to come as you are to any old church at any time. Another one said, God said, come as you please. And the First Amendment says that you have freedom, the freedom of expression. And if that person feels like he wants to express himself that way, you can't stop it. You can't kick him out of the church. Someone said that transgender should sue the pastor. That's what we need, another lawsuit in the United States. Another one said you should be preaching and not concentrating on what the people are wearing. Today, the outrage. Yesterday, common sense. Today, controversial. Today, well, the First Amendment guarantees the freedom to show up at church in anything you want. We've had quite a few articles at thetrumpet.com over the past several years. This one from 2013, where it talks about how that the public has now accepted homosexuality and same-sex marriage. But they're not going to stop there. I think Joel Hilliker wrote this one. They're not going to stop there. They're going to keep pushing to reshape our society. He said an effort is gaining ground to create a world where not just sexual orientation, but sex itself is a choice. Where boys can be girls and girls can be boys. Or something in between. Where people are expected to ignore the biological reality of sex so that all people coexist androgynously or according to whatever gender suits them at the moment. Where everyone pretends that gender confusion is normal, if not desirable. And anyone who doesn't play along can be punished and silenced. How much longer? I mean, he has those who defend him, the preacher, and it probably helps that he's a minority. One wonders what the reaction would be if it was a white preacher who would have done this. But in any event, how much longer? It's already gone through the courts where someone who, because of their religious beliefs, they don't want to make a cake, for example, for a homosexual wedding. And the government, judges, some judge somewhere will say, no, you have to. You have to do it. How much longer before a preacher is told, you have to let him come in? No matter how he looks or how he's dressed. It's their right, don't you know? It's their First Amendment right. And we're all just expected to go right along with it. As Mr. Hilliker brought out, what a contempt this is for common sense, for morality, for the Bible. It's a contempt for God's word, God's inspired word. We've been going through 1 Corinthians recently in Epistles of Paul class. You had to read the entire letter. These Facebook commenters, they should read 1 Corinthians. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 5:1, it's reported commonly that there's fornication among you, and such fornication as is not so much as named among the Gentiles, that one should have his father's wife. Here was a young man sleeping with his stepmother, and everyone in the congregation knew what was going on. And Paul said, and you are puffed up. He said this to the brethren. You're puffed up and have not rather mourned that he that has done this deed might be taken away from among you. Take him away. Get him out. This was a very liberal church area. They had watered down the truth. They were tolerating any kind of behavior. Well, he has rights. He has rights to do this or that. And who are we to judge? He should just be allowed to come on in and sit down among us. Well, not the way Paul looked at it. He said to these brethren, Look, he has a problem, this individual that needs to be kicked out, but you do too. You're puffed up. You've become arrogant, thinking you're more merciful than God because you can overlook these sins. They looked at their tolerance as if it was righteousness, and Paul said it was sin through and through. He that has done this deed should be taken away from among you. The church needs to be kept clean. The congregation needs to be kept clean and pure. We all sin. We all make mistakes. But to live in sin instead of coming out of it, the whole point of the church is called the ekklesia. That's the Greek word. The called out ones. Called out of this world. Paul said in verse 3, "For I verily am as absent in body, but present in spirit, have judged already as though I were present concerning him that has done this deed." It says, "In the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, when you are gathered together in my spirit with the power of our Lord Jesus Christ to deliver such a one to Satan for the destruction of the flesh, that the spirit may be saved in the day of the eternal Jesus, deliver that young man to Satan for the destruction of the flesh, so that he might be saved in the long run, so that he might go out in the world and then change and repent and overcome and grow." I won't even go through all of the verses that talk about suspension, disfellowshipment, what needs to be done to keep the body of Christ unleavened. Verse 6 says, "Your glorying is not good. Know you not that a little leaven leavens the whole lump?" It works that way with our individual lives. It works that way with the church. If we let sin hang around, it's going to grow. It's going to spread. Just like leaven leavens the whole lump, the whole loaf of bread, just a pinch of leaven will do it. Which is why God says in verse 7, "Purge out therefore the old leaven, that you may be a new lump, as you are unleavened, for even Christ, our Passover, is sacrificed for us." I mean, this lesson is instilled within us during the spring holy days, during our observance of Passover in the days of unleavened bread. Every year, we're reminded of the fact that leaven starts small, just like yeast. But eventually it can puff up the entire loaf for the entire congregation, just like what happened in Corinth. God says, get it out. Get it out so that you can stay clean, so that you can grow. This same book, 1 Corinthians, I mean, you talk about a message that not too long ago, it wasn't even seen as that controversial. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 11 and verse 14, "Does not even nature itself teach you that if a man have long hair, it is a shame unto him?" I mean, if a man comes into the church and he's wearing long hair, if he looks like a woman, doesn't nature even, doesn't common sense teach you that it's a shame? Shame on you. Shame on you for tolerating this sort of thing, for accepting this sort of thing. Where are your standards? What's your foundation? What's the foundation of your religion? Does it come from the Bible? How many of those people responding on Facebook, how many of them actually study their Bible? They think they know. Whatever happened to come as you are? Well, that is a common phrase in the world of Protestantism. And you see what's wrong with it. That's what preachers used to say. Even back when society wasn't as unmoored from common sense and from the Constitution like we are today. So it seemed appealing, going back a few generations. Come as you are, we'll accept you. Well, now people are coming as they are, in all of the weird, bizarre kind of ways that you can. In this day, this Sodom and Gomorrah age, it puts religion, it puts these congregations in a difficult position, doesn't it? This preacher had to come out following that exchange. and say, well, look, he was someone, he had been in our congregation for a year, and then he showed up like this, and so I had to deal with it. He's basically implying that if it was someone new, if it was someone that didn't know any better and he just showed up, he probably would have accepted them in. That's the world of religion today. There's not much substance there. There's not much truth there. There's not much Bible there. Verse 15 in this same chapter, 1 Corinthians 11, but if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. But if any man seem to be contentious, we have no such custom, neither the churches of God. Let me read that last verse, verse 16, in the Moffat. In the Moffat, again, verse 14, it says, doesn't nature teach you that if a man has long hair, it's a shame? And if a woman has long hair, it's her glory. It's a glory to her. And then verse 16, if anyone presumes to raise objections on this point, well, I acknowledge no other mode of worship, and neither do the churches of God. You can object if you like, but this is the way it is in the church of God. There's no two ways about it. There's no compromise here, Paul said. This is the Apostle Paul. This is the New Testament. It's refreshing, isn't it? You know where God stands. You know what God expects. And so we rise to his standard. It's his standard that matters, not ours. It's not what society says. It's not what our neighbor says. What does God say? In 2016 at the Trumpet, American morality is transforming. Where will we be 5 years from now? Well, we're about 3 years from the point of this article. And look at where we are. We wrote, it progressed from the traditional Judeo-Christian family to the non-religious family, to the dysfunctional family, to the divorced and remarried family, to the fornicator, to the adulterer, to the homosexual, bisexual, pansexual, transsexual, transgender. Is that where it ends? Or is there more transformation to come? Well, you can be sure, because Satan's the god of this world, and he's been cast down to this earth, and he knows he has but a short time, and he's bent on destroying foundation at the core. And so you can be sure there's more transformation coming. It says, watch the trajectory of what is happening here. The homosexual movement has completely changed modern culture in less than a decade. People now accept and support practices that were utterly opposed to just a few years ago. Now, this deviant sexual movement is tracking in the same direction to see where pedophiles might be in 5 years. Just look at where triumphant homosexuals are today. I mean, what's next? Where do we go from here? Where are the restrictions? Where are the restraints? Are there any restraints? Are there restraints in government? Are there restraints in religion even? You hear one preacher. He gets up and says something that is common sense. It should be. But he's probably just one of a few. And already, as I say, he has to explain himself in an hour-long video. He has to backtrack some because the pressure, so intense, coming from social media, coming from Facebook, coming from Twitter. What is next? Where will we be 5 years from now? Where will we be 2 years from now? Politico had a piece just a few days ago. Well, I think this is in the magazine, the November-December issue. But this is one we're going to include in that 100 years of the new morality. It goes back and looks at some of the history of pornography. There was this act back in 1873. This was when legislators at Congress, this was when they were putting their foot down against obscenity, saying, never mind what it says in the First Amendment, it doesn't mean that this kind of obscenity should circulate all over the world, all over this nation. That's not what the freedoms of the First Amendment afford us. It was called the Comstock Act, 1873, which banned mailing of obscene, lewd, or lascivious materials, but new laws couldn't keep pace with technology. It's about pornography and the spread of it. Politico says there was this law enacted by Congress. And you go back to the technology of the day, mailing out anything that would be obscene, lewd, or lascivious. It says first it was halftone printing, which cheaply reproduced black and white images, then moving pictures, the earliest of which experimented with capturing nude women, igniting a black market of illegally filmed productions that grew steadily from the 1920s through World War II. It says American policymakers took an out-of-sight, out-of-mind approach, hoping to keep the smut quarantined to brothels and private parties. Playboy hit the newsstands in 1953. Hugh Hefner had made softcore pornography a popular commercial enterprise for the first time in the United States. It says government opposition was strong. See, it used to be that when this sort of thing was circulated, that the government, the leaders, you'd get some pushback. There was some in religion, not nearly enough, as Mr. Armstrong discusses in The Missing Dimension in Sex. Instead of standing up to worldliness and what happened following the Great War, the theologians, the priests, the ministers, Mr. Armstrong said they just went along with society. Instead of standing up to it, they went along. And eventually the government did too. But back in 1953, I mean, they opposed Playboy. It says Hugh Hefner spent 2 years battling the U.S. Postmaster General, who refused to deliver copies of the magazine because of its offensive content. In 1957, Samuel Roth, a New York publisher and distributor of adult materials, was tried and convicted for violating the Comstock Act. He was tried and convicted in 1957 for distributing so-called adult materials. It says his case, Roth versus the United States, went all the way to the Supreme Court, which ruled 6-3, a solid majority, in other words, 6-3. They ruled that obscenity was not protected under the First Amendment. You can't use the First Amendment as an excuse to distribute this filth all over the world? It says, and it gave government power to prohibit material utterly without redeeming social importance. That's a quote from the ruling. Utterly without redeeming social importance. The threat posed by this ruling to a rapidly professionalizing industry was fleeting, however. By 1960, Playboy's circulation topped 1 million. It tripled by 1965, and it topped 5 million by 1970, besting both Time and Newsweek. So the laws were there. In some cases, the rulings were even handed down from the Supreme Court. But it didn't stop it. It was like a tidal wave. And everyone, religion, government, everyone in society just caved into the pressure. There were a few exceptions. You saw them in the 1980s, the 1990s, perhaps, before it completely died. The so-called culture wars. But look at where we are today. Pornography is ubiquitous. And the more technology improves, the easier it is to distribute the filth, the obscenity. I forget the name of the bill, the law they tried to pass back in the mid-1980s. This is from Ronald Reagan, 1987. But it was an act meant to protect children in particular. This was before the internet, by the way. This was aiming at pornographic content over the phone, things that you'd hear over a phone call. This is President Ronald Reagan from 1987, clip 3.
With this act, and the implementation of the 7-point plan of the Attorney General's Pornography Commission, in which the creation of the National Obscenity Enforcement Unit is the centerpiece, this administration is putting the purveyors of illegal obscenity and child pornography on notice. Your industry's days are numbered.
That's in the White House in 1987. The purveyors of illegal obscenity and child pornography, your industry's days are numbered. This was government opposition, White House opposition to pornography. President Reagan went on to say this. This is clip 4.
It's been proven time and again that the best way to dismantle any organized criminal operation is to confiscate its ill-gotten gains. Isn't it about time we remove the profit motive from activities that are sick and obscene? When it comes to court orders for such things as wiretaps, the government can get them in cases involving drug trafficking, extortion, and many other crimes. But it cannot do so for felony obscenity offenses. This bill will rectify that needless deficiency.
Right. You look at the way the government can go and get a warrant to stop this or that or the other. And yet, for some reason, we can't stop filth. We can't stop it from being distributed. You give Ronald Reagan some credit for trying, but he was going up against a tidal wave, as I say. But what a different time, just 30 years ago. 30 years ago, Mr. Reagan went on to say this, clip 5.
In the interest of protecting those most vulnerable and impressionable members of our society, our children, this act will prohibit transmission of obscenity over cable or subscription television, and it will provide prosecutors with a powerful weapon to attack the so-called dial-a-porn business that profits from obscenity. Every time a child calls one of these numbers, he or she hears an explicit sexual dramatization. And the time has come for this to stop.
Seems like such a long time ago. And it seems too like it's common sense. Well, we want to protect our children, don't we? We don't want them to see this obscenity, this filth. Now those children, 10, 11, 12 years old, they've got an iPhone, they've got a smartphone, most of them, in their back pocket. They have access to that kind of filth that President Reagan was talking about times about 1,000. Shouldn't we do it to try to protect our children? The laws were there. 1873, the Comstock Act. It banned mailing obscene, lewd, and lascivious material. The principle was in place. They didn't have the internet back then. They didn't have cable TV. But the principle was there. The law was there. The law said you can't distribute this filth in the name of the First Amendment. Well, now you look at it today and it almost seems laughable, doesn't it? But it's prophesied. Mr. Reagan went on, I won't play it for you, but he went on to talk about people in, well, all across America. They're behind this. They want our children protected. They want laws against child pornography, against hardcore pornography, against illegal obscenity. They want the laws and they want them enforced. Well, the laws have been there. But they haven't been enforced, have they? And now it's going in the other direction. Now the lawmakers, now the judges, they're enforcing the distribution of this filth, all in the name of freedom. First Amendment, free speech. Jesus said, as in the days of Noah, so shall it also be in the days of the Son of Man. And then verse 28 of Luke 17, likewise also, as it was in the days of Lot, they did eat, they drank, they bought, they sold, they planted, they builded. But in the same day that Lot went out of Sodom, it rained fire and brimstone from heaven and destroyed them all. Even thus shall it be in the day when the Son of Man is revealed. It's going to be just like that in the last days. Just like what happened before Sodom and Gomorrah were scorched earth. Not because of a runaway campfire, but because of God's wrath. That's where we are today. Seems like such a long time ago when President Reagan was trying to oppose this tidal wave of filth. One last clip from that 87 speech. Let's move ahead to clip 7.
Well, I look to the American people to support this legislation and to the Congress to enact it with all due speed. If this nation can send men to the moon, then we can certainly do some cleaning up here at home and give our sons and daughters the simplicity and beauty that an American childhood should entail.
That's Ronald Reagan from 1987. But he's really pointing out the paradox, isn't he? Mr. Armstrong made this point in great detail over the years. Yes, we can send men to the moon. That's pretty amazing. It's phenomenal. But we can't clean up our homes. We can't clean up the internet. We can't clean up our society. Well, we have rights. We have First Amendment rights. People today, they use the freedoms enshrined in the Constitution as an excuse for the most vile, despicable behavior imaginable, and as an excuse to distribute that as far and wide as can be. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech, or of the press, or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. They take that right and say, well, that means we can say, we can do, we can distribute, we can do anything, anytime, anywhere. It shows, doesn't it, just what the founders said from the start. If you don't have the religion and the morality as the backbone, as the foundation under these freedoms, it's not going to work. It will not last. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
Is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
To America's founding fathers, character meant everything to the success of the nation and its leadership. The Constitution was based upon the fundamental principles of religion and morality. These were the primary building blocks of the American nation. George Washington said, "The foundations of our national policy will be laid in the pure and immutable principles of private morality." Character was no minor issue to America's first president. He regarded it as the basis of national policy. Where did the founding fathers develop these ideas? Many of these principles stemmed from the Holy Scriptures. The Bible provided early Americans with the instruction and guidance of how to properly govern one's life. These beliefs helped build a nation of strong families and upright leaders. Today, America has dismissed the Bible as the foundation of developing righteous character. Men now leave it to themselves to determine right from wrong. Where has the rejection of biblically based principles led this nation? There is a cause for these effects. To understand the course of events that have led this nation to its current state, visit thetrumpet.com and click on the literature tab to request our free booklet, Character in Crisis.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
In the Constitution, you can protest whenever and wherever you want. It doesn't tell you that you can't do it at a restaurant. It doesn't tell you that you can't do it on a football field. It doesn't tell you that you can't do it on a cable news show. You can do it wherever you want.
That's CNN host Don Lemon a few weeks ago saying that it's in the Constitution. Yeah, you can protest anywhere. You can say anything, anytime, any place, anywhere. It's our right. You can even protest at a cable news show, as if CNN would allow a protester to come in right in the middle of the studio during live programming and protest right there. Or as if a CNN host would bring a guest back after that guest just grabbed the mic and demanded to say what he needed to say. How many times have you seen these hosts even go to the point of cutting off the mic when the guest didn't cooperate? It makes me, just the way that we finished that last segment, using the First Amendment as an excuse or a license to do anything, to say anything. Jude 4. You look at what has happened to religion. Religion that says it's Bible-based. Jesus encountered this kind of thing in the first century. Well, the apostles did in particular, following Christ's death. The apostle Paul, he talked about this Simon Magus movement that wanted to do away with law. They said, hey, the grace... Don't you know? The grace gives us the right to do whatever we want. The Apostle Jude said that there were certain men crept in unawares. They came into the church who were before of old, ordained to this condemnation, ungodly men, turning the grace of our God into lasciviousness. They took the grace of God and they turned it into a license to disobey. And so you look at what so many are doing in our society today, a society where that Judeo-Christian ethic, the documents, the founding documents, I mean, they'll quote from them, the bits and pieces that they like, but then they twist them and they pervert them. They take them out of context. It's freedom. We have First Amendment rights. This is from a USA Today op-ed from a few weeks back. It says, the First Amendment doesn't actually give you the right to free speech, and it certainly doesn't give you the right to protest whenever and wherever you want. Instead, it prevents the government, Congress. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech. That's what it says. And this op-ed piece says, it does not give you the right to protest whenever and wherever you want. Instead, it prevents the government and only the government from interfering with your right to free speech. With a few exceptions, anyone else, including a restaurant, a football team, or a cable news network can act to limit speech any way it likes. In other words, you have no constitutional right to protest on private property. If you decide to stage a demonstration at a restaurant, the restaurant can ask you to leave and have you arrested for trespassing if you refuse. That used to be something that wasn't controversial, what I just read there. That used to be common sense. It says if you decide to engage in political protests at work, you can be fired. See how far that gets you. At work on Monday, tomorrow, Wednesday. Well, I've got to take a knee. I've got to protest. You've got to get to work, your boss would say. And those owners of those football teams, and in some cases, they own the stadium too. That's their company. That's their corporation. It says you have a right to speech free from governmental interference, but you do not have a right to free speech on someone else's dime. I'm sure that Don Lemon himself appreciates that CNN is not required to allow guests whom they find offensive or disruptive to use CNN to broadcast their message. See, he says it. He says the Constitution doesn't tell you that you can't protest on a cable news show, as if they allow it. They don't allow it. And any old business or church, to go back to what we covered in the first segment, wouldn't allow it. But you see, today, I mean, the mob gets going. Who does this preacher think he is? That transgender has rights. Rights protected in the First Amendment. It says here, this is not to say that the right to protest can or should be restricted. The framers of the Constitution viewed free speech as a necessary element of a civilized and functional society. As with everything, though, there is a time and a place for it. Of course there is. Of course there is. But because we reject the law of the land, because we reject the foundational law, because we reject the Bible, it's Judges 21:25. It's every man doing what seems right in his own eyes. And so you really have to pay attention to keep up with all of these new rules, these ever-changing rules. The new morality changes with time, Joel Hilliker said earlier this year. This was in the Trumpet magazine. What was once unacceptable may now be encouraged. And what was once tolerated may now be utterly intolerable. It's inconsistent and self-contradictory. It emphasizes the preeminence of the individual and the importance of personal fulfillment over duty to spouse or offspring. It encourages unrestrained sexual license, except in a recent abrupt shift when it involves men coercing women sexually. Depending on who is in authority, the new morality either seeks more authoritarian control or an overthrow of the entire system, and it considers patriotism akin to tribalism. There are no absolute virtues. Depending on the individual and the circumstances, excess, indulgence, intoxication, arrogance, and greed may all be praised as moral or condemned as immoral. We just don't know. The mob has to tell us. Despite its contradictions and volatility, however, it is still enforced with unforgiving conviction and authority. It talks about how all religion is accepted as moral. Eastern religions, Islam, anything. Islam, that includes mandatory full body coverings. That's who are we to judge? But now if it's a Christianity rooted in the Bible, that's immoral. 1 Corinthians 5, 1 Corinthians 11, that's immoral. Every man doing what seems right in his own eyes. Mr. Hilliker says, don't expect consistency in the new morality. Just try to keep up and be sure to comply. Look at the spectacle that Jim Acosta is and has been. Going into the White House, grabbing the microphone, refusing to give it up. Standing up and saying, I'm here to challenge you. I'm not here to ask a question. I'm here to challenge you. And so the White House says, fine. If that's the way that you are in the midst of all these other reporters, if you're going to hog all of the time, then we're going to revoke your press pass or the pass that gets you into the White House without interruption. And so it goes to the courts, and somewhere, somehow, someplace, you know there's going to be a judge out there that imposes his will. Some no-name judge from somewhere that imposes his will on the President of the United States. Daniel Horowitz said at the Conservative Review last week, "Nobody who's a regular reader of this column should be surprised by today's injunction in favor of Jim Acosta getting his press badge back. After all, if a single judge has the power of God and can redefine marriage, create a right for 7 billion people to immigrate, and create a right to 30 days of early voting, there's literally nothing a court can't do. If someone can force his way into our country and litigate rights and citizenship for his kids against the national will, why can't an American opinion journalist force his way into the White House? I guess I can now obtain a press pass as well. Well, we've got freedoms. And we should be able to protest in a restaurant. We should be able to waltz right into the White House and grab the mic and say, I'm here to challenge you. Try doing that in the courtroom that just issued this injunction. How would that have gone over in 2002 when we were in court fighting for Mr. Armstrong's writings, and we had to go in and be so respectful and understand all of the protocol and when to talk, when not to talk? Imagine standing up and saying, I'm here to challenge you. No judge would put up with that. But I guess the President of the United States has to, because the protester, he's got rights. He's got First Amendment rights. These are the new rules. This is the new morality, as Mr. Hilliker said. Now, I mean, there's contradictions all over the place. It's hard to keep up with. It's ever changing. But just make sure that you comply. It says, once we erroneously agree to judicial supremacism and to the notion that a single district judge can order the other branches of government to take the most absurd actions, we no longer have a republic. We have a judicial dictatorship. There's literally nothing, I mean nothing, that a court can do that will elicit a red flag from the body politic. You heard what they did on Friday. As soon as the judge made his decision, then the media went wild. Hey, and not only were they in agreement with the decision, he was a Trump appointee. Donald Trump appointed him. This is all the better. It has to be right. Because, of course, in their minds, Donald Trump's always wrong. Never mind the judgment. Never mind if it's based on the Constitution. Judicial dictatorship. There's literally nothing that a court can do that will elicit a red flag from the body politic. A single district judge has more power than the House, Senate, President, 50 state governments, and our entire history and traditions put together. Think of the power. Here is a president, a sitting president of the United States. He's working as if one hand is tied behind his back. He wants to close the border, but he can't. There's some district judge somewhere saying, no, you can't do it. Well, hang on a second. Barack Obama said that he just created the law out of nothing. Well, but I mean, that's the law. That's what Barack Obama said. You can't just do away with that law. And so he's going up against this constantly. Judicial dictatorship. Everyone doing what seems right in their own eyes. Everyone having a different opinion about what this amendment means, what it protects, and what it doesn't. You talk about free speech anywhere, anytime, any protest. Well, try getting up and denouncing in some kind of public forum. Try getting up and denouncing transgenderism or homosexual marriage. There's people in our society that have to walk around on eggshells with those subjects. Because it's certainly not protected by the First Amendment. That's hate speech. Come on. That's hate speech. You see where this is going. Is it going to transform all the more in 2, 3, 5 years from now? You better believe it is. And that too, all of it's prophesied. Micah 3, I don't have time to get into much of it. Verse 1, he says, "And I said, Hear, I pray you, O heads of Jacob, and you princes of the house of Israel, it is not for you to know judgment." God's addressing our leaders, the rulers of our nations. "It's not for you to know judgment, who hate the good and love the evil, who pluck off their skin off from off them and their flesh from their bones." I mean, we just hate the good and we love the evil. And God is saying where it's leading. He's showing us where this is headed. My father wrote in an article back in 2002, "How much do we truly love our Constitution and freedom of speech? Do we even understand what it is? If the press doesn't understand freedom of speech and its importance, then the American Republic is in grave danger." That's in his personal, "Where Media Bias is Leading Us." That section on Micah, you can find that too. Micah Cries for Justice. You can find that in the Micah booklet. That's all that I have time for today, unfortunately. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.